Good morning. 7:47 a.m., June the 18th, 2017. Happy Father's Day. So yesterday's post-walk exercise was dealing with the old treadmill, bringing in a new one. 170 pounds worth. All in one box. Getting the old one up the stairs was a struggle. It was tedious, but we took it slow and it moved along. Getting the new one was a question of going over to Sears with the van and throwing it in the back of the van. Four of us dragged it into the house, slid the case down over the stairs, and I spent the rest of the day putting it together. It was a struggle. After the struggle of putting it together and getting the old one out and the new one in, I didn't actually use it last night. But it's all set up and ready to go. It's very much like the old one. It doesn't have the nice straight handles for the desk, so the keyboard is mounted at a slight angle. The mouse is not happy. I may wind up putting a trackball on it. I hope those are fireworks. I'm hearing some pops. It's a Father's Day. I was thinking about my father this morning. He died in 2005. '73, '74, I think. 2004, I graduated with my PhD, and he came out for that. He and my stepmother, both of them have... Well, no, I don't know if Betty has passed on yet or not. Betty was my second stepmother. I've had two.
wet, man.
I have to thank my Uncle Neil for wising me up as a teen. I think it's every child's fear that they grow up like their parent. So daughters are afraid they're going to grow up like their mother. Sons are afraid they're going to grow up like their father. Not in all cases, but it's almost a cliche. I think part of that is the need to break the strings, to leave the nest, to take wing on your own. And so, in order to make that more palatable, you have to sort of make an enemy of the other. The other who is ironically most like you. I think it was Uncle Neil who said, "Father doesn't say much, but when he says something, it's usually worth listening to." It's true. I learned a lot about work and life and working life from him. Because in the summer, I went to work at Schlotterbeck & Voss in the factory with him. And I know I've talked about this before, but the rides in the morning were usually quiet. We arrived around 7:30, which meant we had to leave the house around 6:45. 5 days a week. Every day. He was really, 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 really sick. And it wasn't like he loved his job. I mean, Schlotterbeck & Voss is a good job for him. He was the plant foreman. He got kind of adopted by the previous guy. In part because, I think, because the guy lived down the road. Morning. At any rate, he was plant foreman. He was the head chemist and food technologist in an 8-person plant or 12-person plant. And they handled some pretty big customers. There's a lot of, you know, factory line techniques. So one of my jobs was to dump empty bottles onto the rails and to line them up to be filled. Salad dressing usually, occasionally vanilla, almond, some other extracts, flavorings. Sometimes I was on the labeler, I'd have to put the labels on. The label machine was, there were a couple of them. The automated ones where you just put a stack of labels in and then ran the bottles through, those were easy. But there was a lot of play in salad dressing bottles. You know, the kind I mean, the teardrop shaped ones. Narrow neck and then a wide base. And the jig that you held the bottle, you put the bottle in, the jig was not as solid as it might be. Say it with me. One twist. And so one of my jobs And I was the best one. Was to put the bottle in the jig and then eyeball the label coming down on the maybe a little chunk of glue that would go on it, and then the label would come down on a sponge, squish onto the bottle. And so for 3 summers, one of my jobs was to run that label maker, put the labels on those bottles. And for the most part, it was a question of rolling it in, running it out, rolling it in, running it out, rolling it in, running it out. There were a couple. I think the blue cheese dressing was one. But for some reason, those were tedious and extreme. You couldn't actually take your eye off the ball for a second. It had to stay right on it. And I wound up keeping my fingers in the machine while the label squished down. And the challenge there was that the edges of the die had metal, and if they caught my finger, they would squish it. So it used to drive me crazy that I keep my fingers on the machine, but the days that I was writing the label maker, the bottler, they would be, you know, they would have 10-15% higher production those days. And generally we would change up between batches, and so you'd fill one, you'd put the little squishy cap on them, the little shrink thing, the safety liner. They come in a fluid, and you'd have to sort of twist them like a bottle cap so that the bottom would open and slide them down, line them up. He took me to work. Taught me what it was to work on a factory line. Or showed me what it was to work on a factory line. 8 hours a day. 15-minute break in the morning, 15-minute break in the afternoon. 30-minute lunch. Days a week. And we talked about things like decorum. He didn't call it that, but behaving yourself is what he called it. Because as one might imagine, there's a certain amount of horsing around. And it peeved the boss if he saw too much horsing around. It peeved the boss. Something that he didn't really like or think was part of the job, so he had to be an eye open. I had a reputation for being a sitter. Every time anything interrupted the flow of the work, I would sit down. Because most of the job was on my feet, so I would sit down. So I got known as a sitter. You when you do things like that, it makes me look bad. And I can't really say anything to you in front of the others, because that wouldn't be fair. But you're the foreman's kid, and you're held to a pretty rigid standard in terms of what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it. You know, chatting on the line, chatting with anybody on the line, that's fine. Horsing around while there's product to be made, that's not okay. So it was 13, 14, 15. Yeah, those years, those summers. 13, 14, 15. was the year I got my copy of Dune. Ace paperback. I think it's Ace. 95 cents. Still have it. It may be the only thing besides my chess set that I have from that period of my life. I have my high school yearbooks. I have my desk. I forgot that. I have my Pine Light desk. Dad was... Dad was pretty cool. When I wanted something, it wasn't usually. It was difficult to come by. If I needed something, he was there. That's an interesting... interesting distinction. I asked him once, because as I was coming along, I was like, oh, geez, I don't want to have kids. I don't want to have kids. Kids are such a pain in the ass. I asked him if he always wanted to have kids growing up. Because he had four of his own and adopted or fostered or step kids. I don't know, four, five more, eight more. Between the two wives, I think they had eight kids. So plus our four was 12. I've lost track of the stepbrothers and sisters. I asked him once, and he said, well, you know, having kids was never one of my goals. It was probably only because I didn't know what it would actually mean. And I don't regret any of it. It was not only not one of my goals, it was one of my anti-goals. It was one of the things that I wanted to try to avoid. And for a long time I thought we were actually destined to remain childless. But now, I got two kids. They're good kids. I like having two kids. I like the two kids I have, which is handy. I'd like to think I'm a good father. But I guess that'll have to remain to be seen. At any rate, here I am at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.